When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Craving some great 80s music? Play Virgin Radio 80s Plus. On DAB digital radio, on the app, on your smart speaker, and at virginradio80splus.co.uk.
I got my mind set on you.
Even if we're just dancing in the dark.
Love Chris Evans. Woo! Love the 80s.
Virgin Radio
80s Plus.
Pass us over to you.
He makes you laugh on the telly and he makes you laugh on the stage, and now he's doing both at the same time. Here's the Overdue catch-up stand-up show is now available to stream and on DVD. So let's roll out the red carpet and start building some Kevin Bridges.
Yeah, Kevin.
Thank you, mate. Good morning.
It's over to you. How are you?
I'm all right, mate. What time do you wake up?
3:30.
I don't even see that as a window. Like, that's just
a time. It's not really a time, is it?
You kind of wake up at 3:30.
Well, I say 3:30. For once in my life, I was being modest. I go to bed at 7:30. I wake up at 9:30 p.m., 11:30 p.m., 1:30 p.m., 3:30 p.m. Good luck. You've got it all to come. But there'll be a tour in it.
Hey. Yeah. I'm not a particularly good morning dude.
Yeah, well, you will be when you get older, because your bladder will... Well, that's what happens. Your bladder begins to fall apart. You begin to fall apart. You can't swallow things properly. You get dysphagia in your throat. It all goes. You've got all this to come.
Sounds exciting, mate.
There's lots of humour there. Seriously, it's a hotbed. So here we go. This is great. The Overdue catch-up. It's been in the cinemas. You've been on the big screen.
Man. Myself, Beyonce, Taylor Swift... The three big babes.
Swifter.
In the cinemas this year. So, it's just finished its run last week, and now it's available to watch at home or illegally download or stream or whatever. Whatever you want to watch it.
It's available to own digitally and on DVD now. For more information, kevinbridges.co.uk, Kevin Bridges, The Overdue Catch-Up. So it made it to 700 theatres across the UK. Woody Harrelson and Derry Girls, they came to see you do it where it was recorded, which was in Dublin. Why did you pick Dublin?
That was the previous tour.
Oh, sorry.
This tour was recorded in Cork. So you got the country right.
Okay, sorry.
That's all right. I wanted to record it somewhere small this time, and on the tour last year, it was all big arenas, so I thought we'll wait the next year and find an intimate venue, you know what I mean? Somewhere a bit more.
Yeah, yeah.
You can see right into the audience's eyes. And so we've done it there. I think it's different anyway. It looks kind of cool. Usually it's filmed in these big, massive stadiums. Yeah, yeah.
Look how big it is. Look how massive and popular I am.
Exactly.
However,
so we thought we'd strip it right back. It's got an acoustic album. So, and we kept in some of the madness of the audience. Just there's a couple of people just shouting random stuff. And then I dealt with it well, obviously, because I've done it for 20 years. But I thought this kind of replicates what live stand-up can be. So I thought the editor's like, will we cut these out? And I was like, I'll just throw them in, because... people are a bit nuts, so it's good to showcase.
Yeah, it's so funny, isn't it? Because, you know, I hear a lot of American comedians talking about the fact that if they're building towards a new one-hour set or a Netflix special, it starts in a bar, then it's a few bars, then it's a slightly bigger venue, then it's maybe a theatre, then it's an arena, then it can be a stadium. You've squared the circle, you've gone past that and come back. I love that.
You did a warm-up tour in the small places and then you hit the bigger venues.
You're warming down.
And then I've done a warm-down tour.
And you can play with it even more, I would imagine, then.
Aye, well, you'd enjoy it. And then, because I took that bit of a break, I was meant to extend the tour into the start of 2023 and I delayed it for kind of personal reasons. And then we went back on and I thought, right, why don't we just go back to venues that I've enjoyed playing in the past? And we've done some dates in Europe, some dates in Australia and New Zealand. So I've obviously, you need to move with the times. I like to try and keep my show topical.
Yeah.
So if you come and see me in the very first night of the tour and the last night, it's probably going to be a different show, because you need to react to global events and all that sort of stuff. So it's an updated version. Anybody that came to the tour on the UK and Ireland in 2022 will see probably a half of that is different material.
And when you're in flow, right, so when you've got a great set right, at the beginning of a tour, so you've got 90 minutes or a great, a solid 2 hours or whatever you've got, And then you say it changes because world events are happening. Because you've already got the funny, right? And you've got a sort of a, you know, a farm full of funny. And then you get some new crops in. does funny beget funny?
I use a football analogy. I see it as you're building a squad.
Right.
So you've got your squad to get you through the season.
Right.
And then
you can chance a new player.
But the transfer window's always open.
Right.
So you're always kind of getting somebody, or somebody comes up through the academy, a young upstart joke.
Yeah.
He's ready, throw him in.
And because it's surrounded by other sort of
experienced
jokes.
They talk him through the game.
Does it help? I bet it does, doesn't it?
That is 100%.
It's so funny, that, isn't it?
I try and do at least a couple of new lines every single night.
Right.
And then just through the organic process, that does end up becoming a lot of material.
We've been talking about this a lot recently
on
the show.
And it's to keep it live as well. No, it's exciting for
me.
Yeah,
of course. Is that because it's not about the gags, it's about the energy behind the gags? So say we're doing a show here, which is a different kind of thing, but it's, you know, it's a similar mindset. If the show's going well and somebody comes in for an interview, it's because it's all going well, the energy's good, you know what I mean? And so the questions are better because we're all on fire, and, you know, and is it the same? Is that the point? The energy's already there, and so bring anything to the scenario and it's got a pretty good chance of
that's
flying.
If you want to stay in the gig, do you know what I mean? So you don't ever want, if sometimes you've done a routine far too many times, and in your head as you're delivering the routine, you're thinking about, I might try that new flame grilled stack at a Burger King after the show tonight.
And you really are.
You need to just bin. You need to bin the bit, because you need to stay. Stand up's got to be very, I don't want to talk at one of these Instagram weirdos, but you need to be very present.
Yeah, of course you do.
Sort of. So if you get to the stage, you've got
to.
By the
way, some of those Instagram weirdos are my favourite people. And yours, by the sounds of it, as well.
I know. It's,
otherwise, you wouldn't know about them.
I get trapped in the algorithm. You know what I mean? You click on one of them.
One
topless tattooed guy jogging, shouting life advice at you.
Come on.
Click on one, and then that's all you're getting every single
David
day.
David Goggins, so. Then.
I don't think he's a tattooed weirdo.
I didn't say that.
I listened to his audiobook, but I don't believe anything that he says, but he's impressive.
Oh, I think he's great.
Do you think he'd done 10,000 pull-ups? And
yeah, but did you hear about the guy who beat him?
No.
So he set the world record.
See, this is, you got up at 3:30 in the morning. You're one of these. You've been radicalised by this cult.
Of course I have.
Wahlberg, what time does he get up?
Who?
Mark Wahlberg. He said he got up.
I don't think he goes to bed.
He gets up at 4 in the morning.
He gets up so many times, there's no point. So Goggins, he set a new world record for pull-ups.
Right.
And then a British bloke, who runs a gym, who's 60... in Portugal, who was fed up during lockdown because no one was coming to his gym, thought, I'm going to break his record. And he couldn't do one, could he? He couldn't do 10 or something. And he broke his record. He broke David Goggins' record by 3,000? Something like that.
Is this a wind-up?
No, it's true.
So he went for... He couldn't do one pull-up?
Couldn't do one?
Well,
I mean, he had a gym.
Does Goggins know about this?
I would imagine.
Probably going straight down to break.
No, because there's another guy who's broken... apparently, wasn't that great a record in the first place.
Is Goggins, that healthy?
Goggins is a bit of a slacker.
Is that... It can't be good for your musculoskeletal.
I don't know. It's better than sitting on the sofa, I would imagine.
I know, but it's that top...
Or reaching up for sweets. Top cupboard. All that kind of stuff.
Moderation, so, man.
When you get big names, faces in the places, right? Like Derry Girls actress Louisa Harland and Woody Harrelson in the audience.
Yep.
Do you know? Are you told?
So that was the 2018 tour. Done the show on the Friday night. Promoter says, by the way, just to let you know, tomorrow night, Woody Harrelson's coming. Like, wow.
Wow.
My wife had come over for the weekend.
Yeah.
My best mate had come over. And it was like, if I just go and have a good gig here, this could be a great kind of weekend. So the gig went well. Dublin, the arena there, that feels like a club.
Even
it's
like
10,000 people, but they're right in front of you.
Wow.
It's designed like an old kind of amphitheatre.
Yeah.
So the gig goes good. Woody comes backstage. We end up having a few beers, end up going back to the hotel. Anyway, I kind of called the night at a professional time because I had the show the next night. Woody comes back, he brings about 20 people, all these stoned Canadian hippies, and then we end up getting back out, and then the next day Bono is playing in the same venue as me. So Woody is going to that, and he goes, do you want to come and see you too? I'm mates with Bono. So we go, why not? We get up, we've got the day off on the Monday, we're drinking during the day in Dublin, go to the gig, and then Woody says, do you want to come backstage to meet the band? And it was me that called. I said, no, we are unpresentable. We can't go back and meet Bono and the Edge and this. We'd go backstage and meet like Oasis or a Hellraising band, but I'd imagine there'll be a lot of candles.
So you didn't go back?
No, I said no. But
you saw the gig?
We saw the gig, and then later on that night, so I woke up the next morning to a video for Bono. Woody Harrelson sent me a video of him recording Bono in Bono's, saying, Kevin, how come you never... came back here and they had a pajama party or something. It's a bit strange, but it was a cool video to receive.
Yeah.
And so just waking up after a bit of a 2-day, 3-day bender, and the first thing on your phone's Bono's face going, "Hey, Kev."
Pretty cool, man.
So that's my...
Woody Harrelson's annoying, right? Because I've been out with him a few times and he can hold it together. I don't know how he does it. Because he seems to be toe-to-toe. He seems to be pound for pound at the bar. It's not like he's sipping his drinks. He goes for it. He enjoys the smoke. That's common knowledge. And
the guy was...
But he holds it together. He's like... pitches up and you think, well, he's not an actor anymore. Then the next month you go home and he's in a brand new Netflix thing and it wins all the awards. You think, how does this guy do this?
Well, do you know why he was over in Ireland?
No.
He was coming over to the UK and Ireland for all that kind of drunken debauchery. But he was actually here to make the first move at the World Chess Championship. So after a 3-day mad one, right, he's like, right, I better head over to London and move upon.
He's cool, isn't he? He's a dude.
That's
man.
What I mean. It's just there's name dropping stories, but anybody who's ever met him will tell a story about him.
What's that film he was in when he played the captain of the ship when it just all goes pear shaped? The Triangle of Sadness. Did you see that?
No, I've never seen it.
Kev, what a film! You got to watch it, Triangle of Sadness. It starts in one place, it ends up in another.
I actually think Zombieland is criminally underrated.
I've not seen Zombieland.
Oh, man. It sounds like it's a terrible title.
Yeah,
really.
It is, isn't it?
But it's really good, man.
Yeah, if you're not into zombies or lands.
Obviously, he's done more esteemed work than that, but that was the most recent one I had watched before I met him. So,
Kev, when I watch your most recent thing, the thing we can all get now, Kevin Bridges, the overdue catch-up available to own digitally and on DVD now... Everything you deliver, you do with it's. You're so emphatic. It's bang, bang, bang. You really believe in it. You hit it really hard. And whether people were going to believe or agree with what you were going to say anyway, they sort of have no choice. It's so super confident. Is that what you like? How do jokes? How does shtick get to that level of like, this is the way it is, guys. This is how it's going to be. And then there's this. And then there's this. Have a bit of that.
I don't know. Well, you're the one that's getting up there. They've paid to listen to you, so you don't want to listen to somebody that's not quite got faith in what they're saying.
Yeah, but there's different ways. You know, but you leave yourself no. You can't miss a beat, can you?
No,
because it's so big as a. It's like an opera.
Well, that's the thing. Maybe it looks strange on this one because I'm used to playing in front of the bigger places.
Right, right, right.
So I think maybe when I came on, it was only like 800 people or something there at this special.
Yeah.
And if you came on too heavy, the crowd are like, "All right, mate, relax." So
yeah, yeah.
I think I kind of dialed it down a bit.
It's so interesting, isn't it?
Aye, it's like people always go, or different cities or different countries, as if that's the variable.
Yeah.
But it's definitely the size of the venue. Like a club stand-up set is so different from playing in a stadium or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is in between. And I think maybe I did go a bit too big with some of the stuff for the size of the venue when it cuts to the audience and it's just like this tiny venue. But that's the only way I can play it these days.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Do you, that thing that other stage performers do you pick people in the audience who are fire starters and do you play to one or two people knowing that they are like laugh machines?
The thing that, when I first started in comedy, after a few years, you would always have a good, you had a good gig, but you'd come off going, there was this guy in the front row just staring. He just hated me.
Yeah.
And then you started, you start having a bad gig, you actually actively go and find somebody in the audience that's hating it. No, just to confirm. So, what a comic.
Is that helpful?
No, it's not helpful at all. But as you grow and get more experience, you realise, like, just find somebody who's laughing.
Yeah.
So you flip it.
Completely.
And even if the gig's tanking, you just go, right, well, that person's
it's for
loving
you.
It.
This is for you.
And then it's suddenly a self-fulfilling, it kind of switches because you start relaxing and you look at it again and more people have joined that person and laughing. And then
because it's infectious.
I laugh at my own stuff sometimes, but you're also laughing at somebody in the audience going, this person is laughing the way I, when I first had that idea, that person's having exact like
the
reaction.
The discovery of it.
Yeah.
Because there's a real laughter in the discovery. You can't go yet. You've got to make your big request. Rachel's got a huge request it's via Rachel from her husband. So her husband is Alex Horn.
All right.
Taskmaster. I messaged him yesterday because we don't see each other at the minute because he's so busy, saying, oh, Kevin Bridges is on the show tomorrow. Have you met him? And he just said, Kevin is absolutely brilliant. He's really funny. He's very thoughtful. I'd love him to do Taskmaster. If it comes up at all, do say he's my number one target.
There we go. Well, I've been asked live on air, so yes.
Hey! Is it a yes?
Yes, I'll do Taskmaster. 100%. Yep.
Woo! I'll let him know. They're filming series 18 at the minute.
Right.
So we'll you can talk do the next to one.
The technicalities off air.
Is that a done deal?
Is that a done deal? All right, I'm on Taskmaster. Yes. Okay. Done deal.
Live. Like it.
Thank you.
Jack Grealish is a fan, isn't he?
He is. What a guy that is.
Yeah.
Up there with Woody.
Oh, my goodness, mate. No, seriously. I mean, cool as you like.
I know. Jack Grealish. He came to the gig in Manchester.
Jack Grealish recently posted about the show, crowning Kevin the funniest guy ever. If you had to put up, right, 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes, little riff from this show that we can all get now, up against all of the comedy in the world, which bit would you pick?
Right, there's a bit. So when I was saying there about finding somebody in the audience that's hearing this joke for the first time, so when you do like kind of warm-up shows, you take on in your head like loads of kind of rough angles you want to talk about it. So in the show, there's a routine about hemorrhoids, right, piles. So I was doing like heavy... I don't mean heavy lifting, I don't mean gogging stuff, but I was doing these kind of squat kettlebell goblet squats or something they're called, right? And this dude's telling me to add on a bit of weight every week, and then I did feel a proper pain one time, right? And I was like, no, like very
straining,
intimate pain. So yeah. I had to go home. I was like, oh my god, right? And then
you've overcooked
it's the morning radio, but it was piles, right? So I was talking about the NHS and how it's only now an over the phone doctor's consultation, and how there's so much riding on your use of descriptive language, right, over the phone. So that was the kind of angle I took on stage. Then I was like, how do you describe piles over the phone to a doctor? And then I just kind of riffed it one night. It was at the Soho Theatre, and I was like, trying to think a kind of imagery. And I was like, doctor, this is me on the stage. Have you ever been playing snooker and too many balls get potted into one pocket?
Right? Yeah.
So everybody, it takes a few seconds to picture an anus with
a hemorrhoids. Cluster.
So everybody starts laughing. Then there's this one person in the crowd, really pictured it very vividly. So I thought, if I can just find somebody, like, every time I deliver that joke, you need to remember somebody else in the audience is only hearing that the way that person did, right, as well. So that was, I don't know if that's the one joke I would pick.
But it's a funny moment.
Aye, that was a nice... It's
deeply funny.
Deep. And it was very candid, quite open in it, opening
what
up.
What about that time when you were talking about an audience member that was having an affair and they were in the audience or something? What's that story?
Somebody told me that story. So my last special, apparently somebody was watching it on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
And then the camera goes to the audience.
Yeah.
And there's a guy sitting with a female who was not his wife.
Gosh.
But the guy's sitting on Christmas Day watching it with his wife, and then they were clearly with each other. Or maybe the wife knew who it was. Anyway, so basically the guy ended in them separating.
Oh, I didn't know it's that way around. I thought it was funny because like they were in the audience, they're having
an
affair.
No, man, it's quite
like
dark.
They came out and it was the other way around. Not funny at all.
No, horrible.
Funny, not funny.
Family ruined.
Oh, gosh.
Because of me.
Right, moving swiftly on. Got the jingle bells out, that always works. What are you doing between now and Christmas?
I've got one more day.
Yeah.
Trying to promote this.
Trying?
I don't mean trying, but it's done. It's out. Go and buy it. Stream it. Whatever you want.
Sell, baby.
Nah, it's not even. People are skint, so feel free to use the torrents.
All right, good. Excellent. Nice.
And then I go home tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that's me done.
Right.
And then go a holiday with my wife and my son in January.
And what is your success? Without being, you don't tell us stuff you don't want to tell us, but what has success afforded you as a dad, as a hubby? You know, what do you, you know, we said today, if somebody wins the Euromillions tonight, you know those boot rooms in ski resorts where you can put your boots on those pegs that are heated? Get some of those in your life. You know, stuff like that. Have you done anything mad?
No, I just done, when I first kind of, inverted commas, made it in comedy. Yeah. I was pretty much like Euromillions. Like, what was that guy, Mike Carroll or something? The guy that won the lottery and just went mad.
Don't know.
You know who I'm talking about?
Mm, yeah.
I was like him. First thing I done was bought a speedboat.
Good boy.
And then, no, I got my mum and dad, I bought them their house, and then a speedboat, and then a box at Celtic. That was the free bucket list.
Nice. Ones.
And then everything. It's just.
Where's the speedboat now?
It's still up between near where you and you. You must have been up there because the guy told me a story.
Don't say Loch Lomond.
Loch Lomond, the guy, when I was buying it,
yeah,
he was telling me a Gaza story, and I'm pretty sure you were involved. There's a no-wake zone. Do you know what that means?
Yeah, of course.
Gaza never knew what it meant. So it means you need to keep the boat below a certain amount of knots per hour.
It wasn't the boat that was the issue. It was Jimmy Fivebelly's being towed on the rubber ring behind the boat. That was what was the weight that was. And I'm not joking. That's...
Well, just for context, yeah. I was going over it like by 2 or 3 knots, which is very slow, but it was making every other boat in the marina really kind of... The guys are coming out their cabins, like, waving a fist in there, shouting. It was moving every other boat. And then the guy said to me, Gaza, just put it to
Give
the floor.
Give it all the beans.
Just emptied the tank right up, so I can only imagine the movement it has to cause. So.
I love the fact you were so honest there. That's so cool. So paid off mum and dad's mortgage, first thing.
Yeah.
That was the first thing you did.
First thing I done.
Second thing, bought a speedboat.
Yeah.
I love that. I love it.
I thought it was going to end. You know what I mean? You don't know when it's going to end. You're playing a big arena. First time you've got a DVD.
See, this is the deal, isn't it? You're a working class kid, aren't you?
Yeah.
I'm a working class kid. It's like, I'm not embarrassed about the money. People go, oh, you can't talk about money. It's like, you know, it's not that. It's like, no, because it's what we dreamt of. We didn't, you don't understand. We didn't have any. It's different.
And that's it. And as long as you're paying your taxes.
Yeah.
Good to people, then enjoy, man.
And have you still got the box at Celtic?
I still got it.
Good for you. How big?
Holds 8.
Good. Nice.
So it was from my mum and dad. So my dad had rheumatoid arthritis and he was kind of struggling to get to the games. So 2016,
wow.
I thought we'll get a box. More starting back as a family. So
Bridges box. Who else has got boxes there?
Rod Stewart's here, but I think he gets a freebie, man.
He doesn't. Rod
he's in
just
the director's box.
Yeah, Rod just goes in different other people's boxes.
I get bled dry. Rod's there. Conley's got a seat.
Has he?
Don't see him as much.
Not nowadays.
Who else has got a box? I don't know. Just loads of scaffolding firms. And
Kev, I hope this goes well. It's a lovely thing you say there. Look, if you don't have the money, just get it anyhow. Just get it anyhow. Nick it.
It's there. So
the point is, you
want
to make people laugh, don't you? That's the point.
Once it's recorded, I'm just...
You've done all right. You're fine.
Have a chuckle. Exactly,
have a chuckle at this. Come and see me again in the future.
I don't think Universal are going to be too happy with that, but it's out there somewhere.
It doesn't matter. All publicity is good publicity. Kevin Bridges, the overdue catch-up, available to own digitally and on DVD now. When might you do another one?
I'll probably go a holiday January. See, because I was updating the show and I write every day.
So you actually?
Aye, every single day. Even if I don't use the stuff, it's just good to keep that kind of muscle going.
Seinfeld does that, doesn't he?
And somebody said Eminem does it.
Yeah, he's not a comedian though.
No, that's true. But I think he likes to keep his brain going.
Yeah. Have you read Seinfeld's book about that?
No.
He said it's called Is This Funny? And he writes 2 or 3 hours every single day.
Aye, that's what I don't even know if I would class it as hours, but I just kind of write ideas. So I've got a lot of stuff there that I've been trying. Whilst I was recording that, I was going to open mic nights on the side.
Yeah.
I'll probably, after my holiday, I'll go straight back into the
Good
clubs,
for you, mate.
Hit the gym, hit the heavy bag again.
All right, mate.
And then hopefully be back on the road at some point.
Thanks for making time to see us.
A pleasure, Chris.
Really appreciate it.
It's woke me up, mate, as well. It takes me about an hour to get going when they said...
Right, and those early mornings and broken night sleep are coming your way, pal.
Well,
for a while yet, actually.
He gets up at 5 a.m, so I thought the hotel room's always a good sanctuary to actually get an unbroken sleep. But nah, I was up.
All right.
Far too early, mate. But it was great to see you.
Great to see you. Happy Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you
as well.
I
wish you and your mum and dad and the box and the family a peaceful time.
Next time you're up Loch Lomond and you want to see a boat driven responsibly... Give me a shout.
No, I'm right, thanks. I prefer it the other way.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The Graham Norton Radio Show.
How exciting is this?
With Waitrose.
Over on Virgin Radio.
Up and at 'em, come on, things to do. Don't cheer, you'll just embarrass yourselves. We're not bored of it yet, so it's lovely. There's no stopping them. No stopping them.
The Graham Norton Radio Show.
Oh, there's nothing nicer, is there? Nothing nicer.
With Waitrose. Food to feel good about.
I mean, what's not to like?
Saturday and Sunday from 9:30.
Over on Virgin Radio.
All right, I haven't seen this guy for ages. We used to sort of live in each other's pockets for a while. I wish it was still the case sometimes. Vassos, who might I be talking about?
Our next guest is the multi-award-winning actor who's also a human stamp of quality. When he's in it, you know it's going to be good. His new film, The Heist Before Christmas, hits Sky Max at 8 p.m. on Christmas Eve. So please welcome the guaranteed hit, James Nesbitt.
Morning, James.
Morning, Chris. Morning, everyone. Morning, morning, morning.
So you just panopoed.
Did I?
Yeah, which is Hawaiian. It's a Hawaiian-specific word which refers to when you scratch your head to help you remember something you've forgotten. That is panopoing.
Oh, I do that a lot.
Do you?
Yeah. Well, I have to.
You're a panopoist. We're talking today about these words that are specific to languages, which are so gorgeous. So what they do is our anxiety is massively reduced by something if we can put a label on it.
Ah.
So if you have a particularly disappointing haircut that fills you with sadness, right? The Japanese have a word for that, and that is achijaitori. That is a word specifically summing up a disaster haircut that makes you look worse than before and leaves you with an overwhelming feeling of sadness.
Well, I used to have those, and then my hair grew back, amazingly.
Yeah.
That was good,
wasn't it? And now you're comfortable enough to talk about
it. Exactly, yeah.
When did that happen?
No, a long time ago. I actually was one of the first people to talk about my hair magically growing back.
Good for you, mate.
It just meant that then it could magically grow back for some other people as well, some of my other friends.
Excellent.
So it was good. Actually, talking of words, do you know what a snib is?
No, tell us about a snib.
A snib. Now, if any Scottish or Northern Irish people are listening...
Put it on the snib.
Snib, snib, the lock. It's the little thing you put the lock on. You know, so say if you want to go out of the house...
The latch.
But the snib is particular to...
The little teat.
Yes,
the teat thing.
It's a snib.
I like that.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought it was like putting it on the tab, putting it on the slate.
No, snib.
Just put it on the snib. A couple of pints. Can you put it on the snib? When was the last time you had a tab? We used to have tabs. We used to live on tabs. We used to live in Tabsville, didn't we?
I know, Tabsville. Tabsville, Tennessee was magic.
I haven't had a tab for ages.
No, long, long time. Long time, actually. I mean, do you mean tab, or do you mean tab in a bar?
Well, both, in fact.
No. Well, tab, I haven't had a cigarette. I haven't had a puff of a cigarette for 14 months.
Yeah.
Gave up, which is good.
Yeah, well done.
Very good.
Feel better for it?
Unbelievably better for it.
Tell us
and
about
also,
that.
I'll tell you something. I don't understand. And I've been talking to my agent about this. Always looking for work and always available. And I think there should be a campaign where it's not about how bad smoking is for you, it's how great you feel when you stop smoking.
Yeah.
That's never on there. It's all about, you know, and of course there's doom and gloom about smoking. When you stop smoking, you feel tremendous.
Yeah, so I saw something similar to that last night. It's not that exercise is an antidepressant, it's that not exercising is a depressant.
Brilliant. That's
similar
exactly
kind of thing,
isn't
it?
Yeah, exactly, yes, yeah.
Beautiful. We haven't done this for a while. Let's see if we can still do it. You ready?
If I fell in love with you, would you promise to be true and help me understand? Because I've been in love before and I know that love is more than just holding hands.
You go high, I go low.
If I gave my heart to you, you must be sure from the very start that you will love me more than her.
Bum, bum.
Yeah, we used to do that all the time.
Is that your party piece?
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is that for us to stop, or would you like another?
We didn't do the really hard bit, though, when it goes into the very difficult third.
Because we haven't got anything on the tab.
Exactly, that's right.
Yeah. So with this show, you're on to talk about the show, The Heist Before Christmas, airs Christmas Eve, 8 p.m. Sky Max. Watched it last night, right? A, funny. B, has a lot of pathos going on.
Yeah.
C, has a real heart to it.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love Patricia Collins, Mrs. Collins?
I know, absolutely. I know.
Oh, she's amazing
isn't
in
she
it.
Isn't she fantastic?
That's not the actress, that's the character's name.
She's wonderful, though.
The part, because it's a caper, it's farcical
in
parts.
It has all the ingredients of a Christmas thing, but she's sensational, Laura Donnelly.
Yeah, and the little kid, the elder son.
Bamber Todd, never acted before, and little Josh McLeese, they've never acted before. And I think, do you know, that Christmas films are supposed to be about that. The film is carried by two boys who've never really acted before, you know. And the rest of us, me and Timothy and Laura, we're
Timothy
kind of
Spool,
the eyes class.
Come on.
So I loved it. I mean, and I think, but as you say, I think it's, you know, it really... And it's important because it has the message. I mean, it's the Christmas message is very much kind of sprinkled throughout it. But you know, it opens a big window into what is going to be a very difficult Christmas for a lot of people, as it often is. You know, particularly this year with the cost of living. And I think it is a real reminder to people that Christmas is a time to kind of reflect on others, you know, not just ourselves.
Yeah, and it doesn't pull any punches. No, it's good. Like I say, it's like it's pantomime-esque farcical in parts.
Yeah.
And it's really edgy
in
other scenes.
No, it is. No,
and the humour is, it's hard punk humour.
Oh, absolutely. And it's... But I think it doesn't patronise children, I think, you know.
Not at all.
And I think that's what's key about it, you know.
Yeah.
I really hope that kids will be able to watch it with their family, but really it'll resonate with them, you know.
It reminded me of an Alan Bleasdale play.
All right.
Because it's conversational humour for kids.
Yes,
that's right. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It's not jokes.
No, that's absolutely right.
It's just chippy.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's great.
I know. And also just the cynicism that Mikey has, that the older one, it's so painful that, isn't it? You know?
Yeah. His teacher says at the beginning, he says, I lost my father recently. And the little kid says, what did he die of? Disappointment?
That's how it starts.
Like, gee, where are we going with this one?
And
it really grabs your attention.
It really does.
Because you know it's not going to be saccharine. It's really important, that opening scene.
Very important. Because it's an angry young man who's just like, you know, the rest of the world is saying Christmas is coming and he's going, so what?
So what, yeah.
In fact, I don't want it to come anywhere near because it makes us sadder. Yeah, it makes my little brother sadder.
Yeah, the only way Christmas is coming is if I steal it from my kid brother.
Exactly,
And so it's a tale of two Santas. Tell us about yours.
My Santa is...
yours is a naughty Santa.
Mine is naughty Santa. Shock. So I play a bank robber who gets off with... He makes off with £80,000. It's not a big spoiler. It's right at the beginning of the film. He disguises himself as Santa, robs a bank, and joins a Santa Dash, in which there's like 100 other Santas through the town. Yeah. He's obviously clearly a rather sort of amateurish kind of robber, in the sense that, you know, I mean, I suppose he supplies the kind of the slapstick element of the Christmas tale in
the
a way.
Idiot.
You know, the idiot,
yeah.
But there's even a bit, I think, I mean, I don't know if you remember, but there's a bit where he's...
It was only last night, James.
He was walking through the...
Yeah. And I'm not a DJ, like, but I'm not that stupid.
But there's a bit where he's walking through the forest, and I think at one point he says to the wee boy Sean, he says, "My whole life's been a disappointment, son."
So
even the baddie in it has got that thing where life's been a bit unfair to him.
Yeah,
you know?
You carry on like that, this is where you're going to end up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
It's great.
So, it's good. And Timothy Spall plays Santa, who's fallen out of the sleigh, and is wonderful, isn't he?
I mean, he's really good. Again, you forget it's him.
He's
that good. He's got those eyes.
It's just us, isn't it wonderful? The kind of glaze. But that's how good he is. I mean, Tim, you know, I've worked with him 4 years ago on a film, Lucky Break, and not only is he incredibly entertaining and funny and professional and
how clever
and
is he,
patient,
by the way?
He's smart.
He's so smart.
He's so smart. And
he makes you feel stupid just by being with him.
Yeah, yeah.
He's one of those people.
Yes, no,
and you're
right.
You're not
no,
the,
no, no, he
the
is
bluntest
like that.
Knife in the
drawer.
No,
but he's amazing. But he still loves his work, you know.
Yeah, yeah, you can tell. More than ever.
Exactly. You know?
More than ever. He sort of got out of his own way over the years, I would imagine.
Exactly.
It seems to be like that.
Exactly.
In it, he suggests that Santa's Norwegian. That's the only bit I was like, I don't know if the kids are ready for that one.
Yes, he does, doesn't he? Yeah,
yeah.
Because he's got the language. He uses the language. Yeah.
And I was thinking, is he? You know, because I know that without there are spoilers within why he's who he isn't. But I was thinking, yeah, but maybe he's not, and maybe that's part of it.
That hangout might be part of it.
Yeah, it's cool, man. Did you film it in the height of summer? Most of these things are filmed in the height of summer.
No, we actually filmed it February, March in Northern Ireland.
Oh, well,
that was the other big attraction. I mean, just to have the opportunity, particularly as I get older, because I spend a lot of my time now in Northern Ireland.
Do you?
Most of my time, actually. Well, my big girls are like, they're all growing up, you know. So I'm over there a lot in Portrush, where I'll be spending Christmas. But to have the opportunity to film there, you know, it's my favourite thing. I get to do what I love, what I feel such a privilege to do, and to do it at home, and then be able to nip up to Portrush at the end of the weekend or the end of the night.
I cite you to a lot of actors that come in here.
Yeah.
Because they're talking about various things, usually off the air, about they're in Iran. Actually, Danny Mays,
Danny,
and he was talking about the fact he's on stage a lot at the moment in a musical in the
he's
West.
Doing Guys and Dolls, isn't
I think, yeah. And he says, you know, sometimes he forgets to be present. He said he dried last Saturday.
Wow.
Which he'd never done before, and he just didn't know where he was. Yeah. The other actors were looking at him thinking, "Oh my god!"
Wow.
I said, "What did you do?" He said, "I sort of just faded the line out."
Didn't even make it up. That's terrifying.
Wasn't even present enough to just
terrifying.
Think because the audience wouldn't know to yeah, make yeah. a line up. Yeah. Said, no, I just stopped talking.
Yeah.
And I said, "Oh, it's funny because do you remember when I came to see you in that play when you were the builder?"
Oh yeah.
What was it called?
Shoot the Crow.
Which was an unbelievable play.
You were kind.
Awesome, oh, as was everybody. It was a fantastic.
It was good. It was good. Tight wee Cornuth Hill, Jim Norton, and Paddy Lee.
It's one of those plays you go to. Like live theatre can be fantastic, can be mediocre, but you go to something and you can't take your eyes off, and you think, "Oh, I wish all theatre was like this." It's one of those. And you had so many lines in it.
Yeah.
And do you remember I asked you how you remembered it, and you said you used to go around the stage touching things.
Yeah. No, that's
can you take us through that?
Well, I mean, it's been a while since I did that, but I mean, it's. I mean, I've always been pretty good at learning lines, to tell you the truth. But it is, when you're on stage, it is important to just fend off any kind of fear at all. And that would always make me at home with the character, where he is, just where he is at that stage, what's he doing at that stage. And it's just a very good page turner in your brain for all that.
And if you would literally physically go and touch parts of the set. To ground yourself, to
completely.
Remind you, literally remind yourself you're on stage in the West End.
No, absolutely, exactly right.
Sort your life.
That's the way of doing it. Oh, nice. yeah. Because it was terrifying as well, but also magic.
Yeah, the best, magic, the best, magic. The best. The Heist Before Christmas airs Christmas Eve, 8 p.m. Skymax.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that again a bit more in a mo. Other things now. Golf, how's your golf?
It's not bad, actually. I did all right. We played in a wee tournament at Portrush the other day, which, in fact, we were using the old Dunlop 65s.
Oh, yes. 1.62 inches.
Amazing. It was different, but it was good. And I played, actually... I actually played better with that ball than I play with the new ball.
So the old balls, the UK balls are 1.62 inches. The American balls are 1.68 inches.
Yeah.
And then we were all told we had to play with the American-sized balls.
That's right.
Why did you play with the...
We were just doing it as a kind of a Christmas thing.
As a laugh.
As a laugh. But it was great. But just, I mean, totally different. And also on the first at Portrush, we were using one of the old Hickory drivers.
Come on.
Which was, I went out of bounds, of course. Still got a six, though.
So on the right?
Yeah,
out of bounds. Still got a six? Like any of us care.
Yeah.
By the way, it was a par three.
It's a par four.
Went out of bounds
on the right, yeah. Poor
right,
Russia.
So you took three off the tee.
Took three off the tee.
Who are you playing with?
My best mates, Peter Ludlow and Alistair Carson. And a guy called Johnny Doherty.
What's the most... How would you catch this question? The loftiest company you've had in a game of golf?
The loftiest company where I've played. Well, I've played with... Ernie Els, and I played with a lot of those guys,
right.
Fleetwood, Keimer, Rose, Westwood, all those people. And I actually hosted the opening of Loch Earn Golf Club a long, long time ago, and it was a shootout between a very young Rory McIlroy and Paddy Harrington. And Rory was, since he was 17, sweetest boy.
Yeah.
Came up and said, "Oh, Mr. Nesbitt, nice
swing,
to meet you." And then he just went, and it was rain, and he shot like 64. And so, I mean, but to be in his company on a golf course is pretty.
Always
special.
Been annoying.
Yeah.
All right, so what else is going on? So you're doing this.
Nothing. I've been. I don't know what's happening next year. I mean, there's a few things I'm hoping to do, but I mean, I'm getting towards the twilight of my career.
Oh, shut up!
No, feels like that.
No, we had Hannah Waddingham was in the other day. On rather.
Well, she started. Oh, well, no, she's been around for a long time.
Well, no, that's.
I don't mean around for a long time.
No,
I mean,
it's okay. That's the point. That's the point.
Amazing,
that's the trap I sort of fell into. I said to her. You know, she literally is ruling the world now, isn't
she? Amazing.
Quite deservingly.
And brilliant.
No, absolutely deservingly so.
Yes.
And I said, you know, the thing is, Hannah, you and I, neither of us are spring chickens, right? And that is what I meant. I did mean that, but there was a more thoughtful way. She went, don't you mean we're autumn chickens, Chris?
Oh, wow.
And I thought, actually, I do.
Fantastic.
And I prepared my interview. She just came out, you know, like that.
Yeah, yeah.
We're autumn chickens.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you and me are the same. I'm a wee bit older than you, but I think we're the same year. I was born in 65, I think.
66.
You're 66, all right.
Yeah, yeah. So we are approaching... The thing is, I suppose in chronological terms, we're approaching the winter, not even the autumn.
Yeah.
But the thing is, time is different as you get older.
Absolutely.
because as a percentage, it's less representative of the rest of the whole, which is 100%.
Yeah, that's very true.
You know,
yeah.
So it seems to pass quicker, but you get more done. Yeah. So it doesn't really work if you think about it like that.
No, I agree. I mean, you know, so I don't... I mean, and the other thing is, I used to do films years ago with a director called Michael Winterbottom, a very good independent filmmaker. And Michael always used to say to me, your next job's your first job. Your next job's your first
job. Like
that. Brilliant?
Well, it is,
and
isn't
particularly
it?
Particularly in my kind of game, because it's just, well, not just my game. I mean, actors always think, particularly in my business. But it is, your next job is your first job. And if you keep that attitude, then you're still at it.
Very
you're
healthy,
still hungry,
isn't it?
Healthy, yeah.
Super healthy.
Competitive, yeah.
So I have to admit that I, not quite the dog at my homework, but I started to watch this movie last night and I got 5 minutes into it and I had to stop it because... I
had to go to bed.
No, we're getting together with the whole family at Christmas.
Good.
My boys, my brother's three girls who all live over in Moira near Belfast.
Are you from Moira?
No, I'm from Fermanagh.
Oh, gorgeous.
It's near the Lough Erne.
Indeed.
I was just like, right, family, this is what we're watching on Christmas Eve. Don't let the girls watch it before then. Save it. So I watched the first 5 minutes, loved it. Haven't seen another second of it, but cannot wait to thoroughly enjoy it on the sofa
really
in Christmas pajamas.
Delighted. I think it's just got a lovely, nice... Christmas message.
Oh, it's more than that, mate.
No, I know, but I think there's a lot in the Christmas message.
Yeah, yeah.
That what
no,
I mean
get
is,
it,
I think
it.
It's got the whole thing.
I get it.
It's got.
No, it's really profound.
No,
it's
I agree
really
with
profound.
You. I'm delighted you see that, Chris.
It's really good. I mean, depending on what time in the evening you watch it, you might have to have a box of tissues.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'll always.
In fact, you will have
tissues.
To have. A box
I think
tissues.
It's on at 8 o'clock, which I thought it would be on a wee bit earlier than that, but I think it's 8. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah.
But I thought they should put it on at about 6 or 7. But anyway,
excuse
what
me,
do I know?
Why have you brought Mumford and Sons with you? No, I mean, I don't mind them. You can't have too many Mumford and Sons. We just got a double thumbs up from two people who I didn't realise.
And Ian, you know, you've met Ian before, Ian Johnson. Thank Ian you. Is not only my PR, but he's also one of my truly great friends.
Oh.
Yeah, which allows him to not be very good at my PR.
Yeah, or never be fired because you can't fire him.
You can't, exactly right.
Yeah, you'd have to fire him as a friend. Couldn't you be PR friend?
Yeah, exactly.
So no, good. You got you have a lot to look forward
delighted.
To.
Yes, we're fully invested.
It's all in there, isn't it? It's all in there. There's loads of.
But I'm so glad you mentioned Laura Donnelly, who plays Maggie's mum. Maggie, and she gives a sensational performance.
She's like
fulfilling almost every genre there is in kind of acting. I mean, it's like she's doing kind of Brecht, she's doing kind of like, you know,
yeah.
Mike Lee, she's doing kind of Ken Loach, she's doing, but she also does a kind of a really beautiful sort of mum that is so warm and
yeah,
kind, but has been so beaten.
She's been beaten up and she's being overwhelmed and manifesting in quiet but absolute desperation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She doesn't know what to do. She doesn't know where to turn to. She contemplates the unthinkable
yeah.
from her side of the tracks, and her redemption and her family's redemption is the fact she just cannot go to the dark side. She will not allow
that's brilliant
herself to go to
what
the
you're
dark
saying
side.
There is brilliant. It's so true. And also the boys, as I say, this is a film carried by two young boys, Josh McLeese and Bamber Todd. And as Josh was always said when we were doing the press over in Ireland, he goes, well, I have been in a short film before, but this was really my first foray into the big time, you know. But they're just so wonderful, these wee lads that carry it, and they're truthful and honest. And, you know, when they were, like the director, Ed Hall, used to call them, like Josh, his slippery eel, because it's just trying to get hold of him to get in front of the camera to
yeah,
do
yeah.
it, just always moving around. But they were, they understood it, they loved it. You know, I did my first job. I was the Artful Dodger at 13 and about Bamber's age, and it really took me back to the wonder of it all and the magic of it.
You
and
can
how
see that.
You know.
You can see it. I mean, you're all great. You're all amazing in it, all the grown-up actors. But these two kids, you can feel the edge of sort of novelty, a nascent edge.
Absolutely. Because it's also sometimes they kind of like, you kind of, I mean, it might not be the most polished thing, but they're just so honest and
yeah,
kind of like,
great.
They just,
they don't get in the way of anything.
Ah, that's right.
Sometimes we had, who do we have? So we had Tom Hanks in last week, and he said, sometimes you just, I couldn't get this line right, and I was trying to say it like this, and I was trying to say it like that. And then the director came to me, he said, you're having trouble with this line, Tom? This is Tom Hanks.
Wow.
And he says, yeah, I'm having trouble with it. He said, just say the goddamn words.
Yeah, yeah.
Because sometimes you have to get out of the way of the words.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, a lot of the time, learn it and say it, you know.
Learn it and say it.
You know.
Artful Dodger. So we're talking about Wonka at the weekend.
All right.
So went to go and see Wonka at the weekend.
Yes, brilliant.
It was great.
Is it great? Obviously, we've seen it. Is it amazing?
It's great, but it's not a five, right? And why is it not a five? The only reason it's not a five is because Oliver exists and it's a five. And Oliver exists and it's a five.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
All of the musicals, what you need to know is that Oliver's been made since 1968 and it's a five. So there's Oliver.
That's true.
Artful Dodger, Oliver.
Oh, it's the best. I loved it so much.
Where was it? School thing?
It was with a professional comedy at the Riverside Theatre in Coleraine in Northern Ireland, which was attached to the Ulster University, and it was a professional company, and it was the first time they'd done a big production, and I was playing rugby on a Saturday morning, and at the end of it, my dad was there on the touchlines looking kind of fierce, because we'd won, and he says, right, Mum, we're going to the theatre, and I went, what? And we're going to Riverside Theatre, and I'd never been to it, and we walked in and he was looking for the director and he said, oh, they're auditioning for Oliver here today. And I thought you might want to come in because I used to sing. But the auditions were over, but he eventually tracked down the director and the director said, look, well, the auditions are over. And my dad said, just let him sing. And so I stood on the stage and I sang all of Bohemian Rhapsody, all the parts. The entire thing went on for about 10 minutes. And the director sort of the end of it went, OK, will you come back next week? And so I went back and with a few other boys and sang and did a bit of acting and played a bit of the Dodger sang Consider Yourself. And then he said, right, you come with me. And then we walked through this labyrinth of corridors in the theatre, walked in, and he grabbed this cloak off, put it on me, and he put a top hat on me and said, you're my Dodger.
Come on, look at that. Look at what a great story. That's going to be our Instagram clip for today. That is
it.
How it all began. How will it end? Forget that. How it all began. His next job is his first job. But that actually was his first job because he didn't have a next job because he hadn't had a job. Did you get paid for it?
No, but it was great. I mean, that was start. I mean, and, you know, in retrospect,
I've been getting paid ever since.
Ever since, exactly right. Oh, it was great.
So cool, man. Watching Hannah Waddingham. So she's done this special on Apple TV Plus. Have you seen it?
No.
It is flipping nominal, right? It's called Home for Christmas. Hannah Waddingham's Home for Christmas. It is brilliant. It's a concert. It's her concert.
She sings properly.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. And she's at the Coliseum. It's in front of 2,300 of her friends. She knows everybody in the audience is invited because she's been in musical theatre that long.
Yeah,
she knows that many people.
Wow.
And so the audience, goosebumps talking about it.
Wow.
The all 2,300 people are on her side. She doesn't need anyone on her side and they're on her side. And then she goes, boom, right? And I was thinking, you could do this. You could because you can do that stuff.
Wow.
You can hold that many tunes that well. Maybe not quite as
not
well.
Quite,
she's,
it's not quite.
But you could do it. Surely you've got one of those burning inside you, haven't
you? There's a wee bit burning inside me, one of those.
Do you fancy it or not?
Yeah, I do fancy it a bit, actually.
Well, what are you going to do about that?
I don't know. I'll get on to
But you get soon. Like, you know, you get your Rob Brydens, your Anthony DeBex, and they go around with bands around the world, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, in Australia, and they do great monologues. They do songs in between. You've got that.
I mean, I definitely do want to do something. I'd love to do some more music in film. You know, like there's, I'd love
like
to.
Like a musical?
Yes. Actually,
what do you fancy?
Something modern, something new, something where
contemporary kind of thing.
Yeah, but where the character is kind of is also sort of just happens to be a singer or whatever. I don't know, but also I did a musical at Chichester there a few years ago called This Is My Family, which was fabulous. Did really well, and we were going to bring it into town, and then COVID hit and blah blah blah. But I'd love that too because that was sort of half sung, half spoken. But you never knew when it was going to happen. And it was a modern, contemporary, lovely, very, very funny by Tim Firth. Isn't that right? Hi.
Wouldn't you like to dig in? I know this is not your sort of jam, but wouldn't you like to dig into that and create that yourself and get that going yourself?
Yeah, I know. Maybe I should.
It's not what you do. I know that's not what you do.
I know, but no, I think that's true. It's definitely, I mean, it's... Also, again, since we've given up smoking, my God, it's good for your voice. I tell you what. No, honestly.
It's good for your voice, and also because you're not distracting yourself every 90 minutes.
Exactly.
Your flow goes on, and you can create stuff that means something.
No, absolutely. No, I do. So I will, I mean, maybe as a result of today, I will really try and get into this.
And it's going to be something that sounds soft, but is really edgy.
I totally agree.
It dives deep into the pathos and the profundity of your acting ability, and then surprise everybody with the optimism can be the songs and the...
I think that's true. And actually, there's something I am talking to someone about at the minute as a kind of a drama, which we're kind of working on that may just sort of have that.
Paul Heaton's very good at writing those kind of songs.
I love him.
Why don't you get together with him?
Love him so much.
Get together with him. Get some decent writers.
Also, he must have loved, because he's Hull, isn't he, Paul?
Yeah.
Is he not from Hull? Because didn't Wonka come out yesterday, or Shyamalan, say that he loves the
Hull accent?
Yeah. It's probably because he was listening to Paul Heaton. Love Paul Heaton's voice.
Seriously, well, get, come on.
That's a good idea. All right, I'm
going to get like a Big Four or a Famous Five involved and get yourself.
That's a good idea.
Sorted out.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. That's us.
I tell you what I loved about this. Well, I was watching it with my wife. We were watching on a little iPhone in bed last night, right. And then Caroline said, "This is, forward me the link. Let's watch this on a proper screen." Yeah. So we were watching on a big screen, and the thing is, this my daughter and I watched one of these Netflix schmaltzy Christmas things over the weekend. And the thing that's, I think, more Christmassy than a Netflix schmaltzy Christmas thing is that it's real. You know, this is a properly troubled family. Absolutely. Who kind of need Christmas.
Yeah. Well, that's what Christmas is.
It has soul, about. You know.
And that's what films like. If you look at the great Christmas films, you look at, you know, It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life.
I mean, there you have it. I mean, that is not a bad template for something. What is Christmas about? It's about pain. It's about people worrying. It's about, you know, dysfunction, you know, people breaking down. It's not all, and it's about what can save them.
Because it's stopping. The world stops.
Exactly, yeah.
It's the only time the world stops in unison.
I know, yeah, very true. Beautiful, that is. But, and you're asking me, when do we film it? We actually filmed it in February and March. But one of the last scenes was the go-kart chasing scene between me and Bamber and the wee lad. And we arrived at the forest and it was a night shoot. And it started to snow.
Oh. And all you are joking.
All the snow in that is... Because the first day, the first meeting we have in the forest, that was all fake snow. That night, started to snow just when we arrived at work, and it snowed all night. And they had to kind of call a wrap it too because everyone was getting snowed in. All real snow that you see in March.
How cool is that?
Bit of an blessed intervention,
mate.
There.
Blessed.
Yeah. Blessed.
So it's got a bit of Bugsy Malone in with the cars as well.
Yeah. Can't
kids
wait.
In a car
Can't
chase.
Wait.
Come on, the kids get to do the car chase and they nab the baddie. Anyway, I'm saying too much. Yeah. James, great to see you, man.
Oh, Chris.
Seriously, great to see you.
Delighted to see you.
No, nice
and
to see
you've been always such a loyal supporter. See, I mean, there he is. He's talking about he came to see me in the theatre. He came to see me and do other stuff. You're a man.
Well, Tash and I were talking about True Nature yesterday around the tea table. And we were talking about, you know, when you are four and when you are five, you gravitate towards the things you are meant to do.
Yeah.
And then you go to school and that knocks you off a bit.
Yeah.
It does knock everyone off. And then you reach sort of puberty. That knocks you off a bit for various other reasons. And then then there's sort of society in general. Yes. And that knocks you off a bit more.
Yeah.
And then if you get lost further on in your life down the line, whether you're 30, 40, 50s, if you can go back and to remember what were the posters, what were you reading when you're four or five, literally that can help you out. That can get you back to your true nature. And so she said, like she always does, "So what was yours?"
No.
To me last night.
Whoa.
I said, "You know what?" I said, "I was always a fan." Yeah. I was just a fan. I wasn't very good at sport, but I love sport.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't very funny, but I loved humour. I wasn't very musical, but I love music.
Yeah.
And so you just saying that to me now, you've always been supportive. I just got to be a fan.
Wow. How brilliant. See, Picasso, he always just wanted to paint like a child. That was when he was, that was his goal. So I always kind of wanted, my mother always used to say, "You're one age all your life." And she said, "James, I've been five all my life." And she said, "James, you will always be 17.
When you were like 8 or 9. Yeah. Yes.
She said it when I was 30 or 40.
Right, James Nesbitt. Thank the Heist Before Christmas with some very talented pals. Only talent on screen. 8 p.m. Skymax Christmas Eve. You could not watch a more sort of warm, heart-filling, inspirational story of what really matters in our lives as human beings than this. Cheers, James.
Thank you very much. Thanks all.
Love music? Love interviews with lovely musicians? Search Virgin Radio UK on YouTube to find brilliant album specials with some of the shiniest lights on our playlist, including George Ezra.
This is going to be something I'll remember, and that's a really lovely thing. I don't think I was able to do that in the past.
And James Bay. Come on,
let it go. Don't you agree that everybody needs someone when they feel alone?
Watch all that and more at youtube.com/Virgin Radio UK.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.